Just before Tim's going to come up, who's the associate pastor, he's going to come up and chat for a second. But before we do that, I just want to read something from the Bible. It's going to be up on the screen. You can have a look at that while I read it. It says this. It says, "To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everybody else, Jesus told them this parable. He said, 'Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed like about himself. He said, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, of robbers and evildoers and adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all I get.' But the tax collector, he stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but he would beat his breast and said, 'God, have mercy on me, a sinner.' I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted."
Good evening, everyone. I thought I'd continue with the musical theme of the night. I look at what I consider to be the greatest piece of musical theatre ever written. Now, I know that everyone thinks the best music of all time was written when they were 15, and yes, this musical did premiere in Australia in 1987. I'll give you a brief pause so you can calculate that I'm turning 35 this year. But it's not just the music that makes this musical into a timeless classic. It's the story too. See, it's a story that taps into some fundamental questions, some fundamental longings of humanity. It deals with themes of injustice and poverty and love. But I think above all, it deals with forgiveness. The musical I'm talking about is Les Miserables, or if you're a little French challenge like me, you can simply call it Les Mis. And a little later, we're going to be performing a few songs from it, hence the small orchestra to my right here. Now, if you've ever seen Les Mis, you'll know that the plot is quite complicated. There's a lot of different characters, a lot of intersecting storylines, spans quite a few decades in time, and it relates to a rather obscure event in French history. But tonight, we're not going to look at all of that. We're just going to look at one of the main storylines between two of the lead characters, between Jean Valjean, who's the male lead, and his adversary, a policeman who goes by the name of Javert. And the reason we're going to look at this story tonight is I think it's essentially the same story as the one that was read to us in the Bible just a moment ago by Wayne. The story of Les Mis begins with Jean Valjean being released from prison after 19 years. He was in there for stealing. And he's released out on parole. And as is the case today, it's pretty hard for someone who's on parole to be accepted, to find work. And so we see Valjean going from town to town, facing rejection after rejection after rejection. Until finally, a bishop of a certain town takes him in and gives him food, gives him shelter for the night. Yet during the night, a rather bitter and desperate Valjean, instead of repaying the bishop with kindness, he decides to go down and steal his silverware and run out into the night. Unfortunately for Valjean, the police run into him and they find in his bag this silver. And they instantly recognize it as belonging to the bishop. And so they haul him back in the middle of the night to the bishop's residence, get the bishop out of bed, and say, "Look what we found this guy with in his bag." But the bishop does something utterly amazing. Instead of saying, "Yeah, he's a criminal, take him back off to jail," he says, no, I gave that to him as a gift. And then he says to Valjean, "Look, in your haste to leave, you forgot the best silver." And he goes and gets more and gives that to him. Well, the police are rather puzzled, but they eventually leave since there's nothing for them to do. And the bishop then turns to an equally puzzled Valjean and says to him, "But remember this, my brother. See in this some higher plan. You must use this precious silver to become an honest man. By the witness of the martyrs, by the passion and the blood, God has raised you out of darkness. I have bought your soul for God." You see, what Valjean deserved to happen was to go back to prison for stealing while he was still on parole. The just thing, the righteous thing for the bishop to do would have been say, "Yes, that ungrateful person, I gave him food, I gave him shelter for the night, and he threw it back in my face by stealing from me. Take him away. I don't want to see him again." But he didn't. The bishop was not just. towards Valjean. He was merciful. He let Valjean go even with even more silver than he stole. He showed him what the Bible calls grace. That is, undeserved favor. The only condition that the bishop placed on it was that Valjean from now on should live in light of that grace that he'd been shown, who should live in light of that forgiveness, that he should take hold of that second chance he'd been offered and turn over a new leaf, start a new life. And so this is the song that Valjean sings while he's still astounded at the mercy and the grace that he's just been shown.
Yet why did I allow that man to touch my soul and teach me love? He treated me like any other. He gave me his trust. He called me brother. My life he claims for God above. Can such things be? For I had come to hate the world, this world that always hated me. Take an eye for an eye, turn your heart into stone. This is all I have lived for, this is all I have known. One word from him and I'd be back beneath the lash upon the rack. Instead, he offers me my freedom. I feel my shame inside me like a knife. He told me that I have a soul. How does he know what spirit came to move my life? Is there another way to go? I am reaching, but I fall, and the night is closing in, and I stare into the void, to the whirlpool of my sin. I'll escape now from the world of Jean Valjean. Jean Valjean is nothing now. Another story must begin.
So Valjean tears up his ticket of leave. Valjean tears up his ticket of leave that marks him out as a convict. He changes his name and he turns over a new leaf. At this point in the story, you're thinking, why did the bishop do that for him? Why did he give him this second chance? I suppose the big clue that the author, Victor Hugo, dropped is that this guy is a bishop. He's in the God business. And a bishop should know more than anyone. He should understand that the mercy that God has shown each of us in offering us forgiveness. You see, God made us. And he made us so he has the right to demand our obedience. But we've rebelled against him, what the Bible calls sin, and so we are deserving of punishment, just as Valjean deserved to be sent back to prison. Justice demands that the guilty pay the penalty. But the good news, the central theme of the Bible, is that this God has not dealt with us justly. Instead, God has been merciful to us. Instead of us having to bear the punishment, he sent Jesus to die in our place, to bear the punishment for us. His justice was indeed carried out, but not on us, on his son instead of us. And so like Valjean, we are forgiven. Like Valjean, we can go free. We get to start a new life with him. And again, like Valjean, the only condition on that is that we actually accept this grace, this gift that God has given us, and live our lives in light of it. That's why the bishop showed Valjean mercy in the first place. Because as a follower of Jesus, the bishop was simply showing the same mercy that God had shown to him many years ago. And so in mercy, he sends Valjean on his way to start a new life. And we pick up the story about 8 years later, where we find that he's used that money that he got from the bishop, he's used it to become a factory owner and a mayor of the local town. And it seems that he's taken the bishop's charge seriously to live his life in light of grace, to show others that same compassion and mercy that he was shown. And throughout the musical, we see scene after scene of him showing love and care towards others, in particular to a sick and dying prostitute, and he even by adopting her soon-to-be orphan daughter as his very own. Yet very soon, very suddenly, his new life starts to come apart when a police inspector by the name of Javert uncovers his true identity. This guy isn't the factory owner you think. He's not the mayor that you think. He, in fact, is a parole breaker, former prisoner 24601. And so Javert and this policeman Valjean come face to face. Javert is ready to take him back to prison. Valjean pleads for a few more days just to continue helping the people that he's helping, put everything right, and then he'll go with him. But Javert, who's a real stickler for the rules, he disagrees. And so Valjean manages to overpower him and escape. But from that moment on, his life is very different, because from that point on, Javert makes it his mission in life to recapture the parole breaker by the name of Jean Valjean. And this is the song that Javert sings.
There, out in the darkness, a fugitive running, fallen from grace. God be my witness, I never shall yield. Till we come face to face, till we come face to face. He knows his way in the dark, but mine is the way of the Lord. And those who follow the path of the righteous shall have their reward. And if they fall as Lucifer fell, the flame, the sword. And so it has been, and so it's written on the doorway to paradise. Those who falter and those who fall must pay the price.
And so it's been, and so it's written on the doorways to paradise, that those who falter and those who fall must pay the price. Did you pick up that line? Here's a guy who lives by the rules. Valjean broke the rules, and Javert is going to make sure that he pays for it. No mercy shown. We fast forward another decade, and we find Valjean now living in Paris, still in hiding from Javert. He can't really conduct a normal life because of the fear of Javert popping up to take him back to prison. So he's living in Paris as a bit of a recluse. But at that time, there's a small uprising that's about to take place. A group of student revolutionaries put up some barricades in the city and call all the people of Paris to rise up against the government. One of those student revolutionaries, however, is in love with Valjean's adopted daughter. And so to protect him, Valjean thinks the best way to do that is to join in with the revolutionaries to try and look after this guy. And so he joins them behind the barricades. At the same time, however, another character joins the revolutionaries. But he's a spy for the government. He's none other than Police Inspector Javert. But his disguise only lasts about 5 minutes. He's soon unmasked as a spy. But guess who volunteers to take Javert out and shoot him as a spy? None other than Valjean. So here we have 10 years later, Valjean and Javert face to face again, and this time it's Valjean who has the gun. Think about it for a moment. Finally, he can be rid of this guy once and for all. He doesn't have to live his life in the shadow of going back to prison. Kill Javert and the problem's over. You can go back to your normal life. Very tempting. But he doesn't shoot him, proving that he was truly changed by that encounter with grace that many years ago with the bishop. He shows Javert mercy instead. He lets him go free. Now, if this were a Hollywood ending, Javert at this point would see the error of his ways, and his cold, dutiful heart would be changed by the mercy that Valjean had shown to him, and everyone would live happily ever after. This isn't Hollywood. It's a 19th century French novel where pretty much everyone has to die in the end. A lot of, you know, cigarette smoke, gratuitous nudity, and Gerard Depardieu. Or maybe that's just SBS, I'm not quite sure. You see, Javert, he's shown that same kind of grace and mercy that Valjean was shown by the bishop. That same kind of grace, he was allowed to go free. Yet he has the exact opposite reaction to Valjean. He doesn't accept and embrace the offer of grace. He recoils from it. He's actually repulsed by it. All his life, he's lived by the rules. He's neither given mercy nor received mercy. And so now, when he's confronted by grace, when he's confronted by mercy and forgiveness, he can't accept it. His whole worldview just is crumbled by one act of kindness. So this is the song that he sings in response to Valjean's act of grace. And you might notice, the musically astute amongst you, that this is the same melody as Valjean sang when he received grace from the bishop. It's the same song, but it's vastly different words. Let's have a listen.
How can I now allow this man to hold dominion over me? This desperate man who I have hunted, he gave me my life, he gave me freedom. I should have perished by his hand. It was his right, it was my right to die as well. Instead I live, but live in hell. And my thoughts fly apart. Can this man be believed? Shall his sins be forgiven? Shall his crimes be reprieved? And must I now begin to doubt, who never doubted all these years? My heart is stone and still it trembles. The world I have known is lost in shadow. Is he from heaven or from hell? And does he know that granting me my life today, this man has killed me? Even so, I am reaching, but I fall, and the stars are black and cold as I stare into the void of a world that cannot hold. I'll escape now from that world, from the world of Jean Valjean. There is nowhere I can turn. There is no way to go on.
It's good you applauded, because that was the last chance he'll get to hear any applause, because at the end of that song, that final note, Javert commits suicide. unable to reconcile the way his world worked with his radical act of kindness. It sends him over the edge. In Javert's thinking, Valjean should have done the honourable thing and killed him. I mean, at least then he could have died with his principles of justice intact. In response to grace, Javert is found wanting. He's found trapped in his old worldview of justice and judgment. What Javert didn't realise is that he needed mercy too. He needed forgiveness. None of us can measure up to that standard. Even those good people who keep all the rules, none of us can keep all of the rules all of the time. Or as the Bible says in the book of Romans, there is no one righteous, not even one. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Valjean, the criminal, and Javert, the policeman, both had fallen short of God's expectations. Both were deserving of God's judgment. Yet both were offered grace. Both were offered undeserved mercy. The difference between the two is not that one was good and one was bad. They had both fallen short. The difference between the two is that one chose to accept that grace. The other chose to reject it, thinking that he was good enough in himself, that he could do it on his own. And to people like this, Jesus told the story that was read to us earlier. Let's have a look at that again. Luke chapter 18, it says, "To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else." Sounds like Javert, doesn't it? Jesus told this parable. "Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector." Now, you might not be familiar with Pharisees and tax collectors in the first century Palestine where this story is set. But the Pharisees were religious teachers. They were the goody two-shoes, the ones who could keep the rules. Every rule that God had made in the Bible, they made sure they kept it. Not only that, they thought, that's not enough rules for us. We want some more. And so they invented their own as a kind of a barrier around the rules. And then they kept them as well. These guys were the ultimate in rule keepers. They were the holier-than-thou sort. At the other end of the spectrum, you had the scum of the earth, the most vile and detested people, the tax collectors. Anyone work for the tax office here? I know, yeah, someone there. But I know that we don't like the tax man at the best of times these days. But back in the first century, it was much worse because the tax collectors didn't simply collect money from their own people to give to their own government. They collected money from their own people to give to the Roman army who were invading them. They were collaborators with the occupying force. They were traitors. They were taking the money of Jewish people and giving it to Rome. They were considered the worst of the worst. People would not even associate with these guys. And so here in this story, Jesus is setting up the best of the best in a confrontation with the worst of the worst. He says, "The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. 'God, I thank you, I'm not like the other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector over here. I fast twice a week, and I give a tenth of all I get. I keep the rules,' he's saying. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He wouldn't even look up to heaven, but he beat his breast and said, 'God, have mercy on me, a sinner.' And then Jesus tells the punchline of the story. He says, 'I tell you that this man, the tax collector, rather than the other one, went home justified before God.' In Les Mis, the one who recognized that he was a sinner, who accepted God's mercy, he was the one who was saved. But the one who was offered mercy and rejected it in favor of his own rule-keeping, he was the one who was lost. The big question of the night then is, which one are you? Because God's made that same offer of forgiveness to you. Although you deserve justice, through faith, through the death of his son, Jesus, in your place, God has decided that he's going to show you mercy instead. But will you respond to that? Will you respond like Javert, like the Pharisee, thinking that your own goodness is enough to get you there, to get you into heaven? Will you reject grace in favor of your own good works? Because people do that all the time. They think that as long as there's someone worse around to point the finger at, someone like the tax collector or that criminal Valjean, as long as there's someone to point the finger at, then, well, I'm better than them. I'll be right with God. Or they think that as long as the good they do outweighs the bad, that God will accept them. What they fail to realize is that Javert had it partly right. The standard is perfection. And as he put it, for those who falter and those who fall, someone must pay the price. The question is that someone going to be you? Are you going to be like Javert and pay the price yourself? A price, the Bible says, means eternal separation from God in hell. Or will you be like Valjean, like the tax collector, realizing your own sinfulness, realizing that you've fallen short of what God requires, realizing your own need of mercy? Will you put out your hand and gladly accept the offer of God's forgiveness? Will you allow Jesus to pay that price for you? You can make that choice tonight if you already haven't. You can thank God, firstly, for not dealing with you justly, but dealing with you in mercy instead. You can say yes to God's offer of forgiveness, and you can commit your life to living in light of this grace that's been shown to you. So in a minute, I'm going to pray a prayer out loud that says just that. And if you want to respond to God's offer of mercy, then just repeat it in your head after me. And if you truly mean it, you will be changed. You will go from being under the judgment of God and destined for eternal punishment to becoming under the forgiveness of God that comes through Jesus and on your way to eternal life with him. And God will put a new spirit in you, his spirit, who enables you to walk in the way of grace, to live in light of what you've been shown. If you want to do that now, please pray with me. And I'd ask everyone to bow their heads and close their eyes. If you want to respond to God's offer of forgiveness, simply say this in your head along with me. God, I want to thank you for showing mercy to me in not treating me like my sins deserve. I thank you that you sent your Son to take the punishment that should have been mine. I accept his death in my place so that I am now forgiven. And I thank you that you raised Jesus from the dead so that I can now have new life as a friend of Jesus. Help me to live my life from now on in light of the mercy that you have shown to me. Amen. Now, if you prayed that prayer, then please tell someone about it. Tell the person who invited you, who came with you. Tell me or one of the other pastors here. But following Jesus wasn't meant to be done on your own. And we'd love to be able to get in touch with you, to be able to talk to you about some of the implications of that response that you've made and to help you as you start your new life with Jesus. So for that, I'd like all of us, whether you've been coming here for 30 years or whether you've just, this is the first time you're in the building, if you could take out one of these. It was a bulletin handed to you on the way in, and each one should have had two of these. Not all of them are orange. It's marked Endless Praise.